What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to Think Outside the Blue Box podcast. I'm Anthony Rivera. Welcome to the podcast. Today, I am joined by a very special guest. He is actually in New York right now, Mr. Asher Laub. He is a professional violinist. He is, his accolades just, they go off the page. So I'm going to let him kind of introduce himself, and we'll go right into it. Asher, how are you?
I'm pretty good. Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Why don't you tell the audience a little bit about yourself and how did you get to where you are today?
Sure. In a nutshell, I'm an electric violinist, composer, producer, live performer. And I wear a lot of hats. I started at the age of 2 and change on a little margarine box with rubber bands serving as strings. And I started out classical training through a program called Suzuki Method, and it's not something that like I gravitated towards too much. To be honest, I didn't really plan on making music a professional kind of thing, but it sort of found me in a sense as I was pursuing other degrees, and it was just paying the bills as I was making my way through college. So the last basically 20 years I've been doing this in the tri-state and across the country. Based in New York, mostly violin based music. I'm also a music producer that sort of evolved. I mean, I could talk forever. So the career basically started when I was 19, 20, when I made my way to New York for college, for university. And I have an entertainment group, Fiddler's Dream Productions, that I'm proud to, you know, work with some amazing musicians in the tri-state and different parts, different states also. For corporate events, concerts, that type of stuff. But my main focus is on violin and production and sync music, film, sync licensing, and weddings, corporate events, that type of stuff. So,
oh, that's awesome. What was it about the violin that kind of drew you in? Of all the instruments, that how did that find you?
What was it about the violin? Well, it was my oldest brother who I looked up to. He's 5 years older than me when I was a little baby, and I was just impressed. I was mesmerized by his playing, and I wanted to do that. So, and also my aunt Sheila's in the Boston Symphony, fourth chair in the Boston Symphony, Sheila Fakowski. She's somebody who inspired me, and I kind of wanted to do that also. And, I used to have like these private, what do you call it? Sessions where she would guide me whenever she came into town, and she would, you know, watch me playing my concertos and give me a little bit of soft advice. And, so I found that to be an inspiration and gave me a drive to want to do more. But it's not really classical music that so much brought me into the professional realm of music on the New York scene. It's more like the improv that kind of drove me and allowed me to, I guess, to make something of my career, to distinguish myself.
Now, what is the difference between the classical violin and the electric violin? Because I know you said you kind of stick to the electric.
Mm-hmm. So I play electric basically just based on demand. I was playing acoustic for a number of years at just events, private events. And I realized there was just the feedback was too much of an issue playing with wind instruments and drums and just got noisy, and I didn't have a lot of sound control. So the electric violin is sort of a necessity in that type of situation. You can't, in many cases, depend so much on a sound company unless they're super duper, you know, focused on the band. And sometimes there's 25 pieces on a stage. So, you know, they'll just shut you off if you're feeding back in the least. And they're not going to tell you because they just have too much to deal with.
They'll just shut you off.
Yeah, they'll just shut you off because they have to worry about a full production, and it's too much stress for sound engineers, especially if they don't know what they're doing in terms of mixing. So I took it in under I took charge of my own sound, and now I just sort of tell sound engineers to just do nothing to my sound, and I give them exactly the studio quality tone that they need, where they don't have to cut or mix or put on compression or anything. I just tell them to keep it raw.
Nice. So that's with the electric.
That's what the electric is going through my pedal. So
gotcha.
I haven't showed too many people my pedal, but it's like a whole thing, and it's a whole rig that pretty much creates a studio quality tone, which is not naturally presented on the electric. The electric needs some work before it hits the PA system.
It's kind of like the electric guitar, kind of, where it has to go through a bit of processing before.
Exactly. Exactly. Gotcha. It needs processing. And I'm kind of anal retentive when it comes to sound quality because I'm a studio guy. So I need the frequencies to be right. So now it's a passion of mine.
Yeah, no, that's awesome, man. And I was reading through kind of your bio, and it says that you actually performed with the Buffalo Philharmonic at the age of 13. How did that come about?
Well, so I started performing, when I was a little baby, doing the Suzuki Method, doing performances with other kids. The Buffalo Philharmonic was my first like significant performance, and that was alongside the GBYO, Greater Buffalo Youth Orchestra. And I'm from Buffalo, so that's that was like a big deal for me. I didn't really know much about like the touring circuit or Broadway or anything like that. But it wasn't until I was about 20, 21 that I started playing big performances to that scale. It was sort of like one big shot, and then the rest was just sort of NISMA competitions and GBYO, Greater Buffalo Youth Orchestra performances in front of maybe like 500-600 people. But it was me with an orchestra. So that was like the most, that was like this pivotal momentous occasion for me, the Buffalo Philharmonic. That was something that I never really quite experienced before. So,
yeah, especially at the age of 13, that's pretty young to be, you know.
Yeah, I think at Kleinhans Music Hall, many years ago. I don't know if there's any video footage, but anyway.
Yeah. I'd love to play it for the audience here if you can find it.
Yeah, I wish I could find it. I got to ask my mom about that. I don't know if there is. There must be something. I mean.
Yeah, like home video or something, yeah.
I mean, I have tons of videos of my shows and performances. They're all over YouTube and on different channels.
Says you actually performed live on PBS?
Yeah, a couple times. Up in Peekskill, the show was filmed, and then another time, I'm trying to remember, a few years ago, it was also in Westchester and upstate. So that was it was pretty big deal for me at the time, and I hope to have another opportunity like that. I haven't done too many television specials or television events, although I'm working towards my music being in film and that type of stuff. So.
Yeah, I heard you say you're doing some sync work.
Yeah, sync licensing, film licensing. I have a whole sync library on my website under sync, astrolab.com/sync, and different management. I've been speaking with different management about opportunities for placement of that song I've been working on. I can't divulge too much information in terms of placements that haven't been confirmed and contracts haven't been signed.
Gotcha.
Not even just because of the jinx factor, but I don't want to mess anything up. So
yeah,
but there's a lot of stuff in store, and I'm producing a lot of film music right now.
Oh, that's awesome, man. Yeah, I know the NDAs are crazy, especially in the industry. So yeah, no worries.
yeah.
Now let's talk a little bit about your history with your health issues. I know that I was reading some struggles that you kind of went through with the adrenal deficiency.
Yeah, adrenal deficiency is not fun. I don't recommend it. To anybody, it's just, in a nutshell, basically, I don't produce enough cortisol. I didn't have enough energy. I was stuck in bed for months to like a year. I lost my career, had to start all over again. Took me a number of years to like restart everything, to regain the my connections and demand. Prior to that, I had a chronic inflammatory condition. I was diagnosed by a neurologist, and that was pretty depressing to hear. And then
I'm sure
but the upside, and I mentioned in another interview, I'm probably gonna work on a book at some point. I managed to emerge out of that mess with newfound understanding as to what my priorities should be in life. So that was a good thing, and I'm excited to sort of share music and love and happiness and joy with the world, and with my newfound perspective on what's really important in life.
Would you say that music kind of had a part to play in that, you coming out of that?
Well, I would say I could tell you what it wasn't. It was not the Cortef. The Cortef that I was on a permanent dosage of. That just sort of like created bruises all over my legs, and it got me standing and walking around. But didn't fix things. It was like a temporary band-aid. The music, the sad thing was I wasn't able to even focus too much on music when I was in that state because I just didn't have the energy. I mean, I was just, I was non-functional. I was practically a vegetable. It was scary. It was scary because all I wanted to do was just get up and be able to feed myself and eat. And I just wasn't able to do it. I was just in this wheelchair. That was after I was just sort of a vegetable. And I needed my father to take care of me for many months. So, but music was, obviously I was motivated to get better. As I gained strength over the months, you know, the music gave me some motivation, to just keep getting stronger and to learn more about what was wrong and how I could fix it. And, but my ultimate motivation was really my family that, you know, they depended on me and always depend on me. And I just, all I wanted to do was just be able to provide for them. And that's one of the greatest stressors for a father, is to lose the ability to take care for your family. When you realize that's, you know, it's not just myself that I was dependent on. It was just, it's other people that love me and care for me and needed me to be in their life.
Now, do you still kind of struggle with that, or is that something that's in your past?
I am grateful to say that I was diagnosed with adrenal insufficiency, and it's an ongoing, you never get better 100%, but it's been managed to the point where I don't really have to worry as much. And I haven't had any fallbacks. I haven't had any regressions or anything like that. So yeah, I've been consistently able to provide for myself and for my family, thankfully, because I understand my body. I understand the triggers. I understand, you know, I know what foods to avoid, what chemicals to stay away from, things that are triggers in my immune system, unfortunately.
Now, what is it like to kind of be on the road and be a full-time performer? Because you are a full-time performer, correct?
Yeah, I'm a full-time performer. I do about 175 to 200 events a year. And my, you know, the traveling has been a major stressor for my family. I'm still getting calls out in LA and San Francisco. It's kind of painful to turn them down, but I do still go out. Like I went to Hawaii, it was like a few months ago, you know, and I do go to Florida, Texas, get a lot of calls all over the place.
Nice.
I love these events. I love the performances. I try to stay local as in tri-state as often as possible. Just, this is a conversation I had with my wife, and that's the case for now. I fully intend to bring my music to Europe again, and, you know, to Canada, across the country, as soon as the opportunity arises. Just got two kids right now and trying to stay local-ish, you know.
Nice.
This region, at least.
Yeah. Now, do you compose and you write and you do everything yourself?
Yeah, I compose about 12 to 15 original songs a year. And I'm working on 20 because I'm trying to build up my film list, repertoire, so to speak, my for licensing music libraries.
Yeah, so when Hollywood comes calling, you got something ready for him.
Pretty much. Well, just again, working with managers, and that's how it kind of works in the industry. It's like there's demand, and when the demand is there, like, you have to respond immediately. And such as after this interview, I have to respond immediately to a client. Often it's not like, okay, let's talk in 3 days. It's like, we need to talk like today or this afternoon or like tomorrow morning first thing. So that's just sort of the name of the game.
Gotcha.
I'm not sure why, but learn the hard way.
Today's episode is proudly presented by Audible. Whether you're on a quest to broaden your horizons or eagerly searching for your next captivating summer read, Audible has the world's most extensive collection of audiobooks and podcasts. For a limited time, we invite you to sign up for a 30-day complimentary trial, which includes a free audiobook that's yours to keep, even if you choose not to continue with the subscription. Visit audible.blueboxdigital.com or scan the QR code on your screen to start listening today.
We also now offer subscriptions with perks. You can get these episodes without ads, behind the scenes, private live streams, and so much more. Head over to support.blueboxdigital.com or scan the QR code on the screen to sign up. Help the show grow and become part of the Blue Box family. Thanks in advance for your support. Now back to the show.
Now let's talk a little bit about your process. What do you do to get inspired, or what inspires you to come, you know, to compose these
producing music, beautiful music? And my fans are a big inspiration for me. The DMs, the comments, the just the people that buy my music, people that like just send me messages and say, tell me how much they appreciate it. That's a huge motivation. I am very, very motivated to at this point in my career, with the respect to the film music, to get my music in front of audiences that are watching movies and that type of stuff. That's something that really drives me, mostly because I kind of am looking to supplement that more or less against, I say, at the expense of live performances, because I'm looking to make music for people that are passionate about the music, instead of like that are there for a networking event or there for a like another concept where the music is sort of built around the concept. I'm kind of, you know, you get what I'm saying.
I'm trying to get people. Like the music is secondary to.
Yeah, the music's really about the passion. It's about the listener, really. It's like I want the listener to connect with my messages and with my music more than it being a vibe or a. You get my point.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I know you mentioned that at first you didn't intend for this to be a full-time career. Well, what did you do before then?
Yeah, so I have a very expensive nursing degree from NYU.
Nice.
Also very expensive education degree. I was a teacher for 4 years in the DOE, which is something I'm grateful for the experience. And I think it still holds some relevance in my current career. It's just I haven't realized exactly how that will work in with my music. So I do have some ideas around that, and maybe doing some events for the kids or something like that. I don't know, but I do miss teaching to a certain extent. So yeah, that's my background: biology, science, and obviously music has been a mainstay for me since the beginning.
So then how did that transition kind of work from being a science teacher to being, you know, a full-time violinist?
It was more or less a financial decision, because it was just sort of already there and got lots of bills to pay. And it seemed like the pros outweighed the cons with respect to just sort of, I just had some realizations post being in a wheelchair that to what my priorities should be and what I found to be important in life. And that's why music has become my struggle as opposed to other careers.
What is your most proudest performance? What kind of stands out in your mind as
that? I mean, obviously the big iconic venues, it's hard to ignore those. All right, so I'll just go on like basic list. First things off the top of my head: Madison Square Garden, Carnegie Hall, Lincoln Center, you know, being on PBS a couple times, just some festivals that I've played. You know, those have been just a hell of a lot of fun. I would say that, yeah, I really loved this Dreaming Awake commercial that I did for Lucida Surfaces, a Home Depot company. And it was, that's actually on my, you can see it on my YouTube channel if you want to check it out. Just Google that, Dreaming Awake, Lucida Surfaces.
Life. It's not always easy to get your act together. To embrace the moment and catch the song.
That was one of the coolest productions I've done, and I hope to do something like that again.
But if you do,
it was like green screen, but it was in this massive green screen room, like this huge warehouse music video space. And I just, in terms of like, it wasn't like a meaningful production, but it was just. It was just an exciting music video deal for me. It was like this $70,000 production that was like built around my music and my dancing and that type of thing. And I never really had an experience quite like that at the commercial level. So that's something I really, I don't know. I hope I can do it again.
Oh, that's cool. You mentioned dancing. You dance too?
Yeah, I do like a dancing choreography.
Like a Lindsay Sterling type of performance?
Yeah, you know, and people call, like, I was supposed to do something at the Rainbow Room this past week, and I just, like, doubled my prices because I just said, like, I can't do it unless I have my four dancers around me. I'm not interested in being, like, the only person in that setting, because when I started to do that, I found that various private events that I was booked to do, they sort of expected me to do that. And it kind of annoyed me. So now I just tell clients, if you want me to do this unique dancing violinist show, I need four dancers with me. It's just like my rule.
Now that you've done both, what would you say is your favorite thing to do? Like live performances in front of, you know, hundreds or thousands of people, or something a little bit more quote unquote private when in front of a green screen and just the camera crew kind of thing?
The camera crew, that was a lot of fun. I gotta say, I can't weigh one against the other. I love the variety. I love just doing both. And I love the rich experience of, I'm very much into film. And so it's cool to talk to another videographer, you know, expert in the film industry. So I also think of things from the vantage point of films and special effects and that type of stuff. So I love doing that. And I love the concerts, small and large, thousands of people or a few hundred. It's the variety that I really enjoy. And it's really just the umbrella, I guess, experience for me is just the music and people being passionate about the music.
Yeah. I've always heard the saying variety is the spice of life, because if you're doing the same thing over and over and over again, you kind of get bored. And that's kind of why I do what I do. The videography business is because every single day is completely different, whether I'm interviewing someone or whether I'm, you know, shooting a wedding at a venue that I've never done or shooting a commercial for a company that I've never heard of. It's always an adventure. Would you say that's kind of like what?
Yeah. I mean, you and I can obviously we relate in many respects, and it's cool to hear that from you, because I think a lot of people think like we do. I think that depression emerges when you're kind of doing the same crap every day. And it's like, you know, people need variety. That being said, I can't say that this is the case across the board, because a lot of other folks like repetition and like feel the comfort of the daily routine. And there's some element of comfort that I can associate with, that I can identify with in terms of the routine. I like the routine of coming to my studio here and producing music, but the variety aspect is in producing different music every day or every week. So, you know, every music video is different, every song is different, and the space that I'm shooting in is different, every event is different. So yeah, I can't say that I would enjoy being like signing up to be like an in-house performer at one venue. I think after a while, unless it's MSG or Carnegie Hall, I can't say I'd be too happy.
Yeah, because I mean, you'd be performing pretty much the same thing every single night, just for a different audience. And yeah, I could see how that could get old.
Yeah, for the event halls, at least.
Yeah. I had it. Oh, because you mentioned depression. Do you struggle with mental health?
I don't believe that I do. I have been labeled as such by different people, because, oh yeah, he had adrenal insufficiency and he was in bed for a year and then he magically got up. I was objectively like the cortisol levels were objectively like depleted, and that was not a purposeful, you could say it was idiopathic, because I was involved with integrative medicine, and that could have been an error on the part of nutritional imbalance, whatever it was completely unintentional. I've always seen myself as a pretty stable, emotionally stable person. And that's one of the things that, interestingly enough, I mean, I don't mean to get too much into my private life, but that's one of the things that attracted my wife to me, in that I'm not prone to anxiety, depression types ups and downs. But I do see, but it's interesting that you bring that up, because people have labeled me as like, okay, well, because of his past situation, you know, he must be like a manic depressive of some sort. But that's not the case with me. People are welcome to believe what they want.
Speculate, but yeah.
That's not, yeah, people, I can see people speculating that, but I do have health problems. But they're at the hormonal level. And I generally see myself as a pretty happy person. I can't say I'm a stable genius like Donald Trump, but I'm a pretty happy person in general. Yeah, I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, no, that's great.
I am a pretty open book with respect to like my health. And I think it's important, because, you know, I'd like to share my story with other people.
Yeah, no, that's great. And I would assume that just traveling in general and being away from your family for, you know, weeks at a time, sometimes that can kind of affect your mental health a little bit.
Yeah, it does affect a lot of people's mental health, but I'm not so much in that situation. I'm not like on a tour bus or a tour van driving from city to city so much. That wouldn't work so much for my marriage.
Gotcha.
Currently, you know, I'm flown out for two events at a time or one event at a time. I fly back and I'm staying at hotels. I'm not like doing these days. I'm not really doing the hippie van,
The tour,
type
yeah.
experience.
Just touring the country for weeks at a time. Gotcha.
But I have a lot of friends who have, it's really taken a toll on their health, like in a serious way.
Yeah, I'm sure.
It's rough.
Now, let's talk about your music for a little bit. What's your favorite song that you've kind of put together?
That I produced?
Yeah.
Redemption pretty much kicks ass, I gotta say. It's
Yeah.
It's a good production. It's like a full symphony with EDM, so it's like a blend of EDM and classical. Neon Dreams was the first song that really launched my independent artist career. That's progressive house. That's like electro house type of genre, featuring the violin. Redemption is something I'm really proud of because it's not easy to blend EDM and classical.
Oh, yeah.
That's got like winds, strings, like a 40 piece string, layers, and electronic beats, that type of stuff.
So that was kind of my next question. Do you dabble in different genres?
Yeah, so I do some hip hop, cinematic classical. Misha Baruch is a cinematic classical piece I just released along with Fiddlesdream Productions 2 days ago. That's on all major platforms. Redemption was released four weeks ago and has an associated Pixar music video on my YouTube channel. So that's a fun kind of narrative I want to welcome people to check out. It's about love and addiction. So yeah, but to answer your question more directly, yeah, hip hop, classical, EDM, cinematic. That's where I do a lot of genres.
Yeah, no, that's great. Hey, the spice.
Gotta spice it up.
Spice it up.
Well, also it's because of the listeners, listeners want to hear variety.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause you don't want to paint yourself into a corner either.
Yeah. It's true. Absolutely. And I do a lot of covers. So I think people just want to hear variety. So,
right. For somebody that's kind of starting out in the industry, I know my daughter, she's in chamber right now. She kind of plays the violin and the viola. Mm-hmm. She's starting to teach now. For somebody like that that's just starting out in the industry and doesn't really know where to go because there's so many avenues you can go into, what piece of advice would you give somebody that's just starting out?
Well, teaching is definitely a great way to have some stability in your career. Live performances are not necessary unless you hook up with a band. They're not guaranteed. That's what I did initially for like a good 10 years. So if you want to sort of start with the stable end of life within the music context of performance, try to connect with some bands, some booking agents, show them what you got, share some videos of what you're capable of, your range in terms of, are you a sight read? What kind of music can you play by heart? Who do you play with? And that's a good way to launch a career. That's how I started.
Yeah, no, that's great advice. And what's next for you, man? What's in the pipe? I know you can't really talk about a lot of stuff because of the NDAs, but can you give us a little preview of what you're working on?
So film and sync licensing, which you're alluding to, more productions, about 20 productions per year I'm aiming for. Corporate events, I do a lot of corporate events for fundraisers and Near and Far, for instance. They're a very awesome organization that I team up with organizations that make a difference in the world, that fundraise for the sick, the people, the needy, whatever. They do things that make a difference. I am pumping out the music videos monthly. I am trying to build my fan base and as best as I can, which is a heck of a lot of work, let me tell you. And working on honing and crafting my production skills so that I can team up with a variety of collaborators, from percussionists to saxophonists to DJs to other string players, singers. So yeah, lot there's a lot down the pike.
Do you use AI to kind
of
compose?
Yeah. So sometimes things get really expensive when it comes to just doing single releases all the time. So sometimes I will, you know, I'll work on some AI artwork and generate that, because I, you know, I got to try to budget things. So I'll use stuff like Midjourney and Canva and that type, those types of platforms.
Just use it as a tool. That's what I tell people. Use it as a tool. Use it as a superpower. Don't be afraid of it. Don't shy away from it. How do you feel about the copyright situation that's happening right now with AI generated music?
Yeah, it's rough. It's rough and it's scary from the vantage point of somebody who's invested blood, sweat, and tears in music. And I don't think the music industry is going to tolerate it. But I think that a lot of these companies, like the stock platforms, are going to take advantage of it as much as they can. And if they can call me off the hook, you know, till they're blue in the face, and I will never work with any of the, like, Pond or any of those stock companies, because they're going to take my music and they're going to try to simulate it. Yeah. So that's another thing. I think that the people at the top, in terms of film producers, I don't know if AI is ever going to necessarily be able to replicate the nuances or the bespokeness of, like, fitting the actual specific scenes within their, you know, their rendered music. It's possible, but I think it's going to be a while till that happens. So I'm going to keep trudging along and working on my craft and hoping that, knock on wood, the music industry won't completely implode.
I don't think it's that black and white, honestly. I think there's a gray area in there that we're kind of a little bit blinded to, because it's so new, man. It's stuff that we've never seen before, and it's a little scary. But I like the fact that YouTube is actually embracing AI, and other artists are embracing it, in the sense that they're giving YouTube permission to use their music and their voices and things for people to generate their own music. And obviously they're compensating them, so there has to be some sort of compensation model for the artist. Yeah. But what's your kind of thoughts on that?
So I have no problem. Well, like, so first of all, I just bash stock, but I actually I've used stock myself, and I do see a value in stock. However, what I'm referring to is, like, I'm part of some sync licensing forums and communities where generating, like, if I produce a unique type of genre, I don't want the stock companies taking that genre and being able to create many different new forms from that genre that take my job away and take away, like, the pleasure of being able to make that stuff. But to a certain extent, like, yeah, within the context of film, where stock where they want to use stock, yeah, that is, I can see that that's very useful. So I think that there is a lot of nuance. There's a lot of complicated elements. I think that as long as people's jobs are being maintained, and people aren't being, like, we don't just have a world of robots. And if we're like that, I'm cool with that. But if we're going to have a world of robots, then everybody needs to be paid a minimum livable wage, so nobody has to stress out about that. You know what I mean?
In which case,
we'll all just end up like couch potatoes. But, like, the jobs need to remain so that people are motivated. And I think that at the top, like, within the political realm, within, like, even like the private equity firms that are pretty much driving society, they can't have people just quitting. Like, hey, they can't replace, like, people need to be motivated to get up in the morning and, like, do something that they're passionate about. Otherwise, what's the point? So that I'm hoping that there's good judgment at the top, so that us little people can continue to thrive and practice our passion.
Oh, that's great. And where can people find your stuff?
Asherlab.com, Asherlab. Original music is all on all major streaming platforms, Spotify, iTunes, Deezer, you name it. Music videos are on YouTube and other platforms. And all my shenanigans are on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, and so forth.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show, Asher. You're an inspiration to me and my daughter and everybody else that, you know, it's kind of going down the path that you're going down. And I wish you, you know, nothing but the best. And I look forward to hearing your pieces one day on a movie or a TV show.
Oh, that's so nice of you. And thanks again for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Absolutely. Thanks again.